more for me, it was like, to be great, it takes to be within. And that was my mindset. It was like, man, every day if I preach greatness to myself and everyone else, then I could be great. Because greatness doesn't take talent. It doesn't, it's just a mindset. And if you have that mindset to be great, then you can go out there and who knows if you're gonna be the best player in the world, but you're gonna be the best player, best person that day. And that was always my mindset. I pushed everybody that way. I pushed my kids that way. And anybody I can touch, I always tell them, man, listen, hey, greatness called this morning. Did you answer? And I just want to hear people's response. And if they say yes right away, then I know right away they're a positive person. They're like, yeah, hell yeah, greatness call. I picked up. Why would I hang up on that? You know what I'm saying? And it's a mental thing for me, because you know, with our sport, it's very physically demanding, but it's more mental than anything.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is Mike Pouncey, and Mike is a former NFL center who was a national champion in high school, a national champion in college at the University of Florida, and a four-time Pro Bowler in the NFL. Mike retired from the NFL after the 2020 season and continues to do big things off the field. We are going to be inspired and learn a lot from Mike on this podcast, and if you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you tune in weekly, and also, if you haven't already, please go to Amazon and order my new book, Tackle What's Next, and the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks and enjoy. Mike, welcome to the show, my brother.
Oh, thanks for having me, Eric. How's everything, bro?
Hey, everything is well. It was great seeing you down in Miami last weekend. We're going to get to, this transformation that you've had from an NFL center into a freaking lean, mean dude now, showing up with your little boy, his friend. We'll get into all that, but I want to back it up with you a little bit. You were so athletic in the NFL as an offensive lineman. I know you played other sports growing up. So where'd you grow up and what other sports you play?
So I grew up in Lakeland, Florida. It's a central Florida area. It's in between Tampa and Orlando. Kind of small town, not too big, but we grew up just playing football. Really any other sport to us, we weren't into. We were just all ball, man. I remember playing Sandlot when we were kids. And now just looking back on the careers that we had and the path that we took, it's just amazing, man. It amazes us. We sit back, me and my brother, we laugh about it all the time. And, man, how do we get here? And it's just so cliche all the time to say, man, oh, we worked hard and hard work got you there. Well, shoot, I seen our parents work hard every single day and then make a dollar. So it's different, you know. I think we went on a path where, you know, we were able to play a sport, take full advantage of it. And, you know, we enjoyed that ride, man. It was awesome. But I can tell you one thing about it is that, you know, even when I look back at it, the one thing I miss the most about being in the NFL, I guess, or part of football is just the camaraderie you have with the guys. It isn't so much being out there on the football field, because at some point you get to the point where it's like, man, that competitive fire, like, it doesn't burn the same. Even though you still feel it in your mind that you can go out there and play, man, when you go out and step on that field and you feel like you're a step slower, that's the part that, you know, is eating my mind up toward the end of my career. But, you know, I'm still around it now, man. My son's playing. I coach flag football. I coach tackle little league football, and just enjoying this part of life now. So it's been fun.
It's inspiring to watch you on your social media get out there and coach the kids. And some people would say, like, man, that's self-serving. You're putting yourself out there. You're showing off. But to me, the way I use social media as well, like, I want to make it cool to be a good dad and husband. I want to make it cool to be there for my kids. Like, yes, I want to show business success. I'm going to promote my book and promote everything else we got going on. But, like, I wanted to make it cool. Like, I'm taking my daughter on dates. I'm going to show you that. And that's not me saying I'm a perfect dad. That's me saying, hey, here's something maybe you can do because maybe it serves you in your life. So I love when you put that stuff on social media. We're going to get to your career ending in a little bit. But so your brother, Marquise, for those out there that don't know, Marquise and Mike, this is so rare, but they man the center spot for a decade for two NFL teams. Like, that does not happen in the NFL. There's only 32 centers in the NFL, and there's, you know, thousands of guys coming out of college from around the world, whatever it is, that want to come and take your job. But I want to know, growing up, were you and Marquise more like teammates, camaraderie, or was it constant competition?
It was constant competition, but we were each other's biggest fans. Like, we pushed each other beyond belief. And I remember, you know, times where I just didn't feel like doing it, I always had my brother there. And he pushed me to where I could, you know, be to where I'm in the day in life. Both of us were successful because of each other. Without each other, I don't think we could have been here, because you know how hard it is once you leave high school and college, and you're so used to like everyone pushing you. You got college coaches, hey, you got to come to workouts, you got to do this. And then once you get to the NFL, man, once you leave out of the season, you're on your own. And if you're not special enough to guy or you know have somebody else on the side to push you, and that's why our NFL careers are so short and ours lasted long because we had each other. I honestly believe that.
Yeah, I believe that too. And early in my career, might have been right when I was entering the NFL, I asked a guy one time who played a long time in the NFL. I said, you know, I break my leg my rookie year, but I'm like, hey, what makes people have this sophomore slump in the NFL? What is it that like these guys come in with all these accolades and they fizzle out of the NFL? And they said they forget what got them to the NFL. For the first time in your life, for many of us, it's the first time we ever had money in our life. First time we ever had any freedom where you don't have school and you don't have all this responsibility. You get to chill out for a while if you want to. And so I would go back to the university and train with the college guys and just hop right in with the workout groups because I'm like, look, that's what got me to the league. I'm going to continue to do those things. And it'd be 3 months of talking trash with the young dudes and cutting up. But then you form all these relationships too, like Teddy Bridgewater, Lamar Jackson, these dudes that come from Louisville, like we're close because they knew I had their back and we're sitting there talking trash, you know, throughout workouts together. And so you form those relationships as well. But I love that, like, yes, you're going to push each other. And like, that's a brother in life. That's a friend. That's a authentic male relationship in life. Like if someone who encourages you and pushes you, because if you surround yourself with a bunch of yes men, you ain't going nowhere in life. And so I love that. And I think I already know the answer based upon the gratitude that you've already expressed for like your time in the NFL and the mindset that you have around like, wow, we're so lucky we get to play a game and get paid to do it. But I've talked to former teammates of yours. I've also talked to former teammates of your brothers. And something that always came up in coaches as well, we've had similar coaches, Pat Myers and these guys, and they're like, man, Mike Pouncey shows up every day with just a mindset like he's ready to roll, but it's like this positivity that like permeates in throughout the offensive line. And you know as well as I do, like 300 and something pound men, especially playing down in the heat, like a lot of people are moaning and groaning every day, but you would show up every day with this mindset and this positivity about you that rubbed off on everyone. Like, is that part of your makeup? Is that something you're intentional about? Is that something like the way you were raised? Where do you think that came from?
Well, I think it was a combination of everything you just named. I think for me, it was like to be great, it takes to be within. And that was my mindset. It was like, man, every day if I preach greatness to myself and everyone else, then I could be great. Because greatness doesn't take talent. It's just a mindset. And if you have that mindset to be great, then you can go out there and who knows if you're going to be the best player in the world. But you're going to be the best player, best person that day. And that was always my mindset. I pushed everybody that way. I pushed my kids that way. And anybody that I can touch, I always tell them, man, listen, hey, greatness called this morning. Did you answer? You know, I just want to hear people's response. And if they say yes right away, then I know right away they're a positive person. They're like, yeah, hell yeah, greatness call. I picked up. Why would I hang up on that? You know what I'm saying? It's a mental thing for me because, you know, with our sport, it's very physically demanding, but it's more mental than anything. Because, I mean, we've seen some, I mean, not talented guys. I mean, least talented guys in the world play 10 years in the NFL. Why? Because he wanted to, and it was a mindset that he had. And I seen that throughout my career, you know, it kind of changed the way I thought about it, kind of changed the way I went about myself every single day. And, you know, if I could be around anybody and help them out through the day, that was just the way I wanted to be.
I love
that. How is Pat up there? Is Pat transitioning good? Or he's a Pittsburgh now, right?
Yeah, he's in Pittsburgh. So I'll get to see him next weekend when he's in Buffalo. And I'll get to see him.
I'm thinking about coming up for that game. I was just talking to Dion about it. Yep. I'm going to go out there. You know, I'll probably jump through a table or something like you guys do. Get that full Buffalo experience.
Hey, you can be an honorary Mafia member for the day. Hey, and I'll take you to the best wing spots. We'll have a good time. So you let me know.
For sure. I'm going to definitely come up for it, though. Seriously, I'm going to come up for that game.
Okay. Yeah, hit me up. We'll do that one right. And but yeah, I like that. Greatness call. Did you answer it? And I tried to be the same way, though, because someone's got to preach that positivity. Someone's got to preach that message each and every day and get the guys going. And so I tried to take that exact same approach. But so you came into the league in 2011, had this long, successful career, Pro Bowls and all that. If you could go back and give yourself one piece of advice entering the league as a rookie, what would it be?
The off-field issues. That's the one thing I tell every kid. It's just, if I could go back and do my career over, I would X out the off the field issues, because they were just issues that came about that were very, very avoidable. And it was just basically just the lifestyle we were living, you know, putting ourselves in those situations. And, you know, that's the only kind of regret I have about my career. It had nothing to do with playing the game or the injuries or anything about that, because I feel like I left it all on the football field, and every day I walked into that facility, I left it all there. It was the one thing I have regret about my career is the off the field issue. So,
yeah, and that's real. I appreciate you being vulnerable and saying that. And I would say this, though, like, you can walk away from your career and have no regrets about it because you gave all you had and you were making decisions in those moments based upon your knowledge at the time. Like,
yeah,
you weren't stepping into situations saying, I'm going to sabotage today. I'm going to sabotage something right now. Like, in the moment, you didn't know. And so, and I say that from a point of,
in a way you kind of know that you're doing something wrong. What I didn't vision was being retired, and, you know, 10 years after my career, all this stuff that would pop up, and my kids ask me, "Oh, what happened here? Why was this? Why did they say this?" You know, that's the stuff that I couldn't look past 5 years, and I was like, "Man, you know what? Whatever. All this will blow over." And now I'm sitting here, you know, 12 years after my, you know, start of my career, and I'm looking back like, "Damn, man, like, I wish I would have, you know, seen this day 30 when I was 33, like sitting there like, wow, don't do that." You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you go through it, you learn from it. I hate to say that you can learn from stuff like that, because some of that stuff is very avoidable. But, you know, I just wish, you know, that I could go back and, you know, do that part over, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's real. I appreciate you saying that. And there's a lot of people that can learn from your experience and can say, oh, yeah, like, when you talk to guys, you can let them in on that, and then they cannot make those same mistakes. So you can use your story to even further impact guys in that way. And you mentioned that mindset of greatness each day, but I like asking guys that played at the level you played. You played on teams with some of the elite of the league, you played on many Pro Bowl teams. In your mind, in a league that there's so many people on par with each other talent-wise, what truly separates those elite players?
Routines. I think all the great players have routines. They take care of their bodies. They eat right. You know, they during the season, they buckle down, and all they care about is football. And I know it sounds, you know, cliche, like most people say, there's no way you can just think about football, but it is. You know how our schedule works. You know, you could choose whether to go out and have dinner or eat in that night. You could choose to step out on a Friday night or not, or you can choose to, you know, take care of your body on a Sunday night after a game instead of going out and having drinks. So I think the best players, they have routines and they stick to them, and those are the ones that are the most successful.
Yep, that's life too. That's businessmen. That's husbands. That's anything you want to be successful at. Create a routine that puts you in that routine for success each and every day. That sets you up for success. Those habits will just take over, and then it's rinse and repeat, and you're not using willpower to make those decisions anymore. It's just what you do. And I'm always big on routine and habits. And you mentioned earlier that towards the end of your career, you just didn't feel like you were the same person. That's the same player on the field. And that's when you knew that it was time to hang it up. Now I'm watching from a bird's eye view and I don't see it, but you can feel it. So is that what ultimately led you to say, "Hey, it's my time to hang up the cleats"? Because from the outside looking in, it looked like you had a lot more good ball left.
Yeah. And you know, it's more when you're a great player like you were, Eric. And I know, cause I watched you a lot. I mean, we competed against each other to make Pro Bowls every year. And I know when you watch film, you looked at me the same way. So I felt like when you're a great player in the NFL, practice was easy. And whenever practice felt hard to me at the end of my career, I was like, damn, like, what the hell? Like, why is practice hard? Like, because you know that the drop-off of talent level is very, very big in the NFL. Like, if you're a starter, they're getting paid $10 million. If you're not, you're getting paid whatever the minimum is. And that talent drop-off is a huge, huge difference, not just because of pay, but that's just because they can't afford to pay another guy to come in and give you that look at that same talent level. And when I felt like practice became hard, I was like, man, damn, like, this ain't it. Anybody can, you know, take something and feel good on game day and go out there and play. But, man, during the week when practice felt hard, I knew right away, I was like, man, this might be it. It might be over. I didn't want to admit it because every great player sits there and wants to play as long as they can, just, you know, send their career to, you know, get whatever they get towards the end. And for me, it was like, damn, man, it ain't even worth going back out there for my mental when I know practice became hard to me. And I don't know if you had experienced that towards the end, but I mean, I had 4 hip surgeries and I didn't move the same and it just felt hard. And whenever I couldn't deal with it mentally, not even on game day, because game day, I go out there and perform still, you know, it was just more like, man, it was a, Pouncey last name meant so much to me that even at practice, I didn't want to feel like I wasn't performing at a high level, because I was like, man, I'd just rather a guy not coming to the NFL, not knowing and not seeing what we put in every single day throughout our whole career, and then seeing this part at the end where I'm not the same player and don't have that same, you know, mindset as the rest of the guys, but, oh, he was a good player. So I, at that point, I had saved my money really, really well. I had a lot of accolades, and I was just ready, you know, to kind of enjoy some time with my kids, because my kids, I got a daughter that's in high school now. My son's 9 years old, and was like, dang, I missed so much because I had my kids very, very young. And, you know, that wasn't that it was forcing my way out, and I didn't want to give myself a reason to say that was the reason why I stepped away. It was more because of the mental part of me not being the same player. But, you know, when I look back at it, it's like, dang, now I get to have time with my kids. I get to coach my son's team. I get to go to all my daughter's basketball games. And then I get to now, you know, bear the fruits of, you know, all the success we've had throughout the NFL with all the money we made.
Right. And I respect your decision to not want to tarnish your name and to keep your legacy where it's at, because you go and play a lot of bad ball at the end of your career, and that's what people remember. It's what have you done for me lately? And it's that recency bias. So that's what they would see. You mentioned that you were good with your money in your career. I'm always interested to know this because I didn't grow up with money. So when I got money, I had to ask advice from people and figure it out. Now, when we got drafted, if you put your money in the market, it was a no-brainer. You were making money. And people now are like, how much money do you have in the bank? And I'm like, look, I got drafted in April of 2009. The market hit its lowest point in March of 2009. I just got lucky. But who gave you your advice around money when you came in the league?
Yeah, so we actually went through a good, you know, we found a good financial advisor. And we were friends kind of 2 years prior to us, you know, making any kind of money in the NFL. We were like, you know, don't worry about the agent at this point, where, you know, everyone's trying to find an agent. Was like, hey, let's find a financial advisor, someone that has a good track record. And, you know, we kind of did a lot of research on it. We had the University of Florida kind of do background checks on it and just kind of put us, you know, with a guy that they trusted and they felt like, you know, wasn't going to screw us over. Anyway, well, this guy ended up doing really, really well for us. We have a bunch of real estate that we own, like hotels. And now me and my brother, we own a liquor company that's doing really, really well. It's big Miami-based company. We're in like over 3,000 accounts. Carnival Cruise Line just picked us up fleet-wide. And I mean, this is probably our next big thing. I hate to even say that we're in an alcohol company now, because we're athletes, former athletes, but it's done really well for us. And I think this is going to be the next big hit for us, honestly.
That's fun.
We sent Dion a bunch of it up the other day. So I'm going to hit him up and tell him to let you try it out. But it's called JF Hayden's. It's a mango liqueur, citrus, and an espresso. But it's doing really well down here.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I know Dion's not a drinker, so he should just pass it on to me. And
he's good at promo. So when the boxes came in, he did an Instagram video for us. I was like, bro, thank you so much. I know you don't drink at all, but
hey, he doesn't drink. He doesn't drink. But I told this story on the podcast when he came on. He doesn't drink. His dad was worked for Budweiser his whole life, so like alcohol was just never anything big for him. You know, it wasn't like the lure of alcohol was just always around. It wasn't that big of a deal. And so he was my driver. His rookie year was my last year. And he would always just drive because he loved being around and loved being at the, you know, around all the guys. Well, for his rookie night, I told him, I said, for every drink you have, I'll take $500 off the bill of the big dinner bill and I'll pay it myself. And he had one. And I was like, dude, you went 3 years of your life without drinking. Don't, like, I'll give you a grand. You don't have to worry about it. Like, he was drinking an espresso.
Just because he took a sip of it, honestly, man. I'm like, Dion, how the heck can you hang out like that? If you see him out, hanging out nighttime, it's like, bro, you think he's had 10 drinks. But, bro, it's just his personality. He's very, very outgoing.
Yeah. We'll move on from Dion, but that's cool. And that's great about the financial advisor and finding them first. And I talked to people
really well for us, though, bro. Honestly, we started out in Columbus, Ohio. You know, he was a Ohio State grad, a white running back. It's funny to say, but he's done really well by us. We own a bunch of real estate up there, and kind of where we started all of our, you know, our portfolios up there in Columbus. You know, just based off because he worked with Merrill Lynch, and you know that's just where they were home based out of.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you found him at your time at Florida, and we could do a whole separate podcast on the team you played on at Florida. The different personalities, everyone from Tim Tebow, one of my favorite Brandon Spikes, to Hernandez, and you and your brother. I mean, there was just Percy Harvin. There was so much talent on that team, but the personalities is what amazes me. We'll stop after this on the Florida thing, because we could honestly fill our entire time together with that. Urban's caught a lot of heat lately, but I mean, that had to have been a heck of a coaching job by him to blend all those personalities to form that dominant on-field team.
Yeah, Urban put together a hell of a staff. Those two recruiting classes that we had in 2006 and 2007 were probably two of the biggest, you know, if not the biggest in college history because of the amount of players that he brought in. But I was telling those guys, and we've been talking about it for, you know, this whole offseason about doing a kind of a 30 for 30, but we had all signed up to do a Netflix thing for it. And then it all kind of fell under, you know, once, you know, Urban had went through the whole Jaguar thing. And you know, me and my brother weren't kind of all the way committed with it just because of the fact we want, you know, if we're going to tell a story, just tell the truth about a lot of stuff, you know, like don't try and sit here and, you know, push stuff under the rug or, you know, not tell the truth about it. Let's just, you know, that's what the people want to hear. Let's just tell them what they want to hear. And I think that stuff sells better anyway.
Yeah, the last time I talked to Spikes, he had done like 15 hours worth of recordings because you put a microphone in front of Spikes, he can go and go. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me it fell through after the stuff with Urban, but I can't wait. You all just need to independently produce that and then just sell it off yourselves.
1,000%, because if you ain't talking about royalties and, you know, making that. And for me, like the biggest downfall for me that, you know, like a lot of guys from that team that make it to the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, we should make that pot about those guys. Like, let's help those guys with financially. And when it kind of didn't go that direction, for me and my brother, we were just like, nah, it don't sit well with us. And we just like, let's just wait. Just wait and see. Things will turn out better if you just wait. You know, instead of jumping on the first thing that comes to fore.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. When you look at a business deal, because I'm sure you get approached with stuff all the time, how do you vet what you're going to put your money into?
So now how we look at it is that obviously I want to look at the pref is going on my money, the initial amount that I'm putting in, how much I'm going to make back each year off my investment. And then I want to see how fast on the return I get. If I can't get my return back within the first 2 years, I'm not comfortable with the deal. And right now, like how we are with real estate's at its highest. But also if you're investing in it, it got to be a good area because people are moving in and out of places. And so for us, I'm big on pref and the return on how fast I would get my money back, my initial investment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's good stuff there. All right. How much you weighing nowadays? I got to know.
230. I'm jacked too. I was 3% body fat whenever I did that testing that you have to do with the trust fund or the trust, not the fund, but the trust through the NFLPA.
Yeah.
And I only did the testing at the hospital, Cleveland Clinic down here in South Florida. Bro, I was 3% body fat. I couldn't even believe that. I was like, bro, I was getting on a scale or doing my body fat in the NFL at 19%. And to see it at 3%, I was like, bro, it's unbelievable. It's the greatest I've ever felt. And honestly, bro, I could just cut out the carbs. I cut out like all the sugar and I fasted for a whole year. So I would stop eating at 8 p.m. and then try and make it till 12. But usually, bro, after 11, I'm like, I'm about to pass out. Like, I couldn't drink enough black coffee. They're like, oh, just drink black coffee. It'll get you through. I'm like, bro, first of all, I'm taking 30 in the morning. And now I'm like, so much coffee. I don't even like coffee anymore. You know what I'm saying? Because I passed it for so long using it. Yeah, it was a good process, though. Now I had to change my whole wardrobe. And I like this body a lot more. Everybody's like, oh, you can go back and play in the NFL. I'm like, bro, it's crazy to hear people think that it's that easy.
Right.
You can look good and go out there and play in the NFL.
Dude, you know what's funny? I'm medically disqualified from ever playing again because of my neck, but people all the time will be like, oh, the Bills need you. I'm like, one, they don't need an unathletic 250-pound offensive lineman because I'm not athletic enough to play anything else. And I'm like, I can do them no good. That's why I call the games on the radio now, but good for you. And another reason I like when guys lose the weight when they're done playing, besides the obvious health benefits, is it takes away the possibility for the return. And not that I don't want guys to do that. I just know me personally, if I had the opportunity to go back, it would have been on me every year. I'd have saw contracts that guys are getting paid and been like, man, I could go make that this year. I would have said, man, you know, the Bills are really good or whoever, the Dolphins are really good this year. I want to go back and play for them. But this cuts it out. Now you can move on with your life with peace and never even have to look back.
I'm trying to move on from it, but I'm going to get back into coaching one day. I know for sure I'm going to get back into coaching. I don't know at what level, just because I enjoy it so much coaching my son's Little League team. And I just know I have so much to give to it. It's just that I don't have the time to do it any other place than down here in South Florida because of my son, you know.
Right.
And I want to see him once he gets off to high school and stuff, then I'll think about it. But I just people's like, oh man, you should go coach. I'm like, man, but I'm 33 years old. My son has 6 more years until he goes to high school. I'll be under 40, 39, whatever. I was like, I always start coaching at 39. I seen a lot of coaches start coaching. So that's probably going to be the next big decision I have to make when my son goes out to high school. But I hope that liqueur company sells, man. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I seen one sell the other day for like $130 million. I was like, damn, man, that'd be one of the greatest things ever in life.
I know.
Get that lucky. Now, that's luck. Now, that's luck. Seriously, that's luck.
I know. I got in with a seasoning company called Dano Seasoning here in town in Louisville. I had the owner of the company on my podcast. He's just a hustler at heart. He started selling it at trade shows, builds up this big TikTok following. Now they're in deep 8-figure sales. Well, I bought in fairly early just because I liked him. He hustled, and I respected how he went about his business. So I said, man, I want to invest. And so I got in on that one. So the liquor company sells, the liqueur company sells, and Dano sells. We're gonna have us a nice party one day.
Yeah, we're gonna get us a big helicopter together.
Yep, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right, we're gonna touch on football for a minute. I always hate asking this question, but every time I do a speaking event and we do Q&A, this is the first thing anyone asks. So I'll ask you, throughout your career, who did you feel like was the toughest defensive lineman for you to go against?
And Ndamukong Suh.
Really?
I just felt like in the run game, pass game, he was, you know, I know he didn't get a lot of sacks throughout his career, you know, but man, he gave you so much in the pass game, not just in the run, but he would bull you. He worked moves. He was very, very strong. But he was probably the toughest player just all around game. I really just talking about like pass rush, Aaron Donald,
yep.
those type players in pass rush. But I'm just like total package, probably Ndamukong Suh or Haloti Ngata.
Yep.
Those are two probably top.
Yep. Those dudes are both great. My thing about Suh is
I would put Kyle there too, Kyle Williams. I'll put Kyle Williams there too. It's just that he was the three technique most of the time. So out of the guards, he would crush our guards all the time.
Right.
You know, at center, he didn't really line up at the nose that much, but he was one of those guys where, man, he was a total package. Run, pass, like a dog.
Yep. I know it. I know it.
You know, you had to go against shit every day.
I know it. And he was a tough practice player too. You know, them white D linemen, they never turn it
off. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know the scouting report, yeah.
Yep. Hey, my thing about Sue is I noticed this like 5 years into his career. I was watching him on film one game and I was like, I don't think he touched the ground. Now he made like 5 tackles, had a sack, a couple quarterback hits, but he didn't even go to the ground when he made tackles. Like, his balance was so unbelievably good. He would get his hip rocked on a double team and still stay on his feet. Like, he would rarely hit the ground. And me and him would go at it earlier in our career. I mean, we hate each other. And then eventually you get older and you gain respect for each other. And I remember, I guess it was my last year, 2017, we're playing a cold game up in Buffalo. And I go to back block on a power and he jets up the field. And I barely get a hand on him before it's like fumble in the backfield type deal. And I looked at him and I was like, how'd you jump that? He goes, Richie's giving it away with his stance. And like,
oh my God. See, you know, and he was that kind of player, that smart. Like, he was very all about ball. I remember when we first signed him down in Miami and I was, you know, stalking his Instagram page at this time. And I go down on his page and he's running on a treadmill in full pads, like shoulder pads, helmets. And the first thing in my mind, I was like, bro, this dude trains different. Like, he's different. That's why, you know what I'm saying? Then I would see him work out. I was like, all right, let me see how he trains. Let me see how strong he is in the gym. Never seen him lift weights. He would do like kettlebell like lifts, explosion lifts, like jumping. Like, I'm like, damn, bro, like how the hell is this dude that strong, that explosive, bro? It's just genetics sometimes with guys.
Right.
I mean, he was big on explosion. That was his thing. Like, let me be the most explosive player. I don't got to be the strongest. Like some of these guys benching 500 pounds. He was like, man, if I'm explosive off the ball, I'm already at an advantage. And that was his thing. He was a great player. Yeah, I have so much respect for him just on and off the football field. Just.
Hey, when I watched the video of Haloti Ngata do a Turkish getup with a 150-pound dumbbell and then get up and dunk a basketball, that's when I said, man, some dudes are just different. I mean
– yeah, that there, I mean, you could train your whole life and not do that.
Right.
That dude there, well, yeah, he can wake up out of bed and do it. I seen that same thing, that Turkish get up and then – all of a sudden, you know, we had a Polynesian strength coach down in Miami, Dave Faloka. The next day, we're doing Turkish get-ups. I'm like, right. I said, Dave, cut this shit, bro. Like,
that's hilarious. He saw the same video we did. Hey, we're recording this on a Thursday. The Bills beat the Dolphins last Sunday. Are the Dolphins a Super Bowl contender right now? Is that how you see them?
I just see it early in the season. I just love the success that they're having. You know, it's just so early. You know, you got to win games in October and, you know, the end of that second half of the season to be a real contender for the Super Bowl. But I just like the direction this football team's headed in. I love the fact that Tua's going out there and basically, you know, clearing up all the doubt about him not being a good player. You know, that was a kid that came off injury at the beginning of his career. He fractured his hip coming in, correct?
Yep, and he has his ankle.
Yeah, then his ankle, then he has COVID, and he's not doing any reps in the offseason because now you're having a weird season coming into the NFL. Now you're coming in, and it just takes time at that position. And I just wish, man, I'm just glad it's happening for him. I love all the success he's having, and that defense is the real deal. And I honestly, I was there to support Deion this past weekend, man. Deion's one of our, you know, one of our really, really good friends. And,
yeah.
You know, anytime I get to support that kid, man, I love everything about him and I support him. But yeah, I do hope the Dolphins do well this season. I don't want to say it's too early and jinx them, but damn, man, to go out there and play the way they did against Buffalo, I was impressive to see. I know you guys, I was at that game, so I seen the way y'all moved the ball up and down the football field, 90 snaps. I mean, y'all had, what, double the amount of yardage, and that just shows you that playing in that stadium in September, there's definitely an advantage. Just like when they go up there at the end of the year when it's snowing and freezing, there's definitely an advantage for the home team. And so we'll see. They play again, so it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, my rookie year, we were rotating offensive linemen in the first half. Yeah. And I was like, no, I want to get in a rhythm. Like, I'm fine. I do not need to come out of the game. And they're like, in that game, we didn't have that many snaps. It would have been fine. But you get into a game where you are playing 90 snaps, you do need to rotate early, but you don't know when those games are coming. So you don't really want to rotate that O-line. But I thought our coaches were crazy my rookie year. And then last week, they probably could have used it. Your point on Deion. Uh-huh. Deion's like a little brother to me. I love that dude to death. We text pretty much weekly, and I got his back forever. I absolutely love that kid. And then my thoughts on Tua are, I'm not surprised by what he's doing this year, because it's the first time that the organization and really like the coaches and everybody are putting some confidence behind him. Like, hey, yeah, it's not, oh, Tua throws a bad pass, here comes Ryan Fitzpatrick in the game. It's not, hey, we might trade for Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson's in Cleveland. Yeah. He just got the most guaranteed money in history. He's there. Okay. Now Tua's our guy. And you know what? Even if Tyreek Hill does not mean that Tua is more accurate than Patrick Mahomes, even if he doesn't mean it, the fact that he goes out in the media and says it, that gives Tua that confidence to say, man, I do belong. I do belong in this league. And because that doubt can creep in quick at that quarterback position. So I think they've done everything right. Mike McDaniel's done a lot to give him some easy reads, get him in a rhythm, let him make some throws, and then he can push the ball down the field. He made that 3rd and 22 play. He can push the ball down the field. So I've been impressed with him so far. I'm with you. It's early, especially offensively. I don't know how much depth they truly got, but if you can stay healthy, it doesn't matter. And so, and then I'll say
they get Austin Jackson back. They'll get Austin Jackson back soon. I know you had an eye ankle sprain. He's on IR, but they get some linebacker back in the, you know, second half of the year, that's going to really, really help him out, because you know how tough it is with linemen in that second half, man. The guys just fall apart.
Yep, for sure. And, like, I don't love seeing Miami good just because I work for the Bills. But I'll say this. Rivalries make sports fun. Rivalries make it fun. Yeah. Leaving that game, I couldn't find my car after the game because the last three times the Bills played in Miami, the Bills jumped up on them. There wasn't that many home crowd fans there. A lot of the Bills fans get a ride to the game. The parking lot was so empty, I just walked out. This last time, I didn't even think about where I parked because it's never been an issue. I could barely find my car after the game. Like, that's what makes sports fun. So it's cool that they're both rolling right now. It's cool that the Patriots aren't rolling right now, because that's the one team I don't want to see good. So that being said, I'm glad the Patriots aren't doing good.
Trust me. The Patriots aren't doing good. Everybody in the AFC East is doing well. I can promise you that. And that's a testament to how great Tom Brady was. I can promise you, because man, Well, you know just as well as I know, playing the AFC was East was the toughest division for the longest inside the NFL. And to see Tom leave it, man, that was crazy. And now the Patriots are getting their due diligence.
Oh, yeah. I love it. All right. I got a few recurring questions for you, and we'll get you out of here. What role does your faith play in your life?
So I'm a big-time Christian. I read the Bible every day. That's one thing I do. I'm really into Psalms. You know, I love reading through Psalms a lot. Just direction that, you know, that part of the Bible gives you. It just, I love reading it every day. And I force my kids to read it. Not force, but I've kind of instilled in them that, you know, how big religion is and how far it's gotten us all in life. So, you know, they're big in religion too. Both of my kids go to Christian schools.
Awesome. So, I love to hear that. Love to hear it. Yeah. What was your first car?
My first car was a 96 Chevy Caprice.
Nice.
Me and my brother shared it, obviously. So I would say it was a half a car. I didn't have my first real car until my senior year at UF. My brother bought me an Escalade.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah,
he came. Shared everything. But then, yeah.
Yeah, he got to the league a year before, so he hooks brother up with a car. That's awesome. What's your favorite restaurant down in Miami?
My favorite restaurant? It had to be Prime 112 to do dinner. Prime 112 probably be the best menu wise, but yeah, Prime 112.
Yeah, I love that spot. When I had Crowder on, we were talking. I forget her name, and I wish I would have looked it up before this one. Suni, something like that. Black woman at the bar makes the best espresso martini in the country. Me and my wife will sit there and get one with her every time.
Oh, man, that place there, I wish they would just make it a little bit bigger so that whenever it's packed in there, we're not all like this, you know what I'm saying? But
I know.
And the food's so good and the environment's so amazing that you, no matter what, it's hard to complain about. But they made it a little bit bigger.
I know it. That's what happens with the popular spot. All right, last one for me. This is what's next with Eric Wood. You alluded maybe coaching earlier, but what's next for Mike Pouncey? What's coming down the line for you?
So what's next? The next biggest thing for us is our distillery down in Wynwood is opening up. It's for our liqueur company. We're right across from Jackson Memorial Hospital. And, you know, that's the next biggest thing for us. You know, that's going to be very time consuming for us once we open up. So it's going to be a full bar type deal. And then we're going to do cocktail classes and stuff at nighttime. But our distillery and this liqueur company is our next big thing.
Man, that's awesome. I'm proud of you, brother. I'm proud of your transition out of the league. I'm proud of your career that you had, the way you always carried yourself. I appreciate you being vulnerable, too, about the off-field stuff, because there's a lot of people that will learn from that. There's a lot of young people that listen to this podcast, not even athletes, that it may hit them, like, what I do right now in 10 years from now may be brought up. Do I want – this is why the podcasts are clean, because one day my kids will listen to these podcasts, and I want to keep them in mind. And so I appreciate your time. I tried to look up other podcasts that you had been on, and I couldn't find any. So the fact that you agreed to do this means the world to me, honestly. I know your time is valuable, so I truly appreciate it, brother.
Oh, thanks, Eric. I appreciate it, man. And I'm proud of you as well, man, for you to be successful after football. You know, I was a big-time fan of you while we were playing. You know, even though it was always that competition, who's going to make the Pro Bowl, you know, I love the way you played the game, man. You were a hell of a football player, and I'm glad everything's well in your life, man. It's awesome.
I appreciate it. Can't wait to hang in Buffalo next weekend.
Oh, yeah. I'll see you soon, bro.
Yes, sir. Thanks for tuning in to this episode, presented as always by Punched Energy Chews. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Share it on social media as well, and we will share it too. I would also love it if you could pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next. It's on Amazon, and the link to do that is in the show notes. Let's keep making our what's next in life our best yet.